Welcome to Sound Tradition, where we examine the theology, practices, and traditions of the contemporary church. My name is Jason Shirk.
And reporting from wherever I'm at is also Luke Hitz.
Okay, and so today we are going to be talking about another item that has hit the news, kind of a pop culture item in a way. But if you haven't heard, there's been a scandal at the Village Church with Pastor Matt Chandler.
And I think scandal might be too strong a word.
Right, yes, yeah. But I mean, but it's become that because people are talking about it, you know, yes. And all that kind of stuff. So it's just something that has just popped up on the radar with the news and Christianity. And it is being labeled by some as a scandal. Like Luke said, that might be an over-exaggeration of what's actually going on here. But if you don't know who Pastor Matt Chandler is, he is a Southern Baptist pastor down in Texas area near, I believe it's Round Rock. Is it Round Rock, the city?
Don't ask me.
but they have it's a multi-site site, or it was a multi-site church, and I think they just made all of their churches go independent after that. But it's a well-known ministry. He's the one who took over for Acts 29 after Mark Driscoll was driven out of the position because of his pastoral abuse. And so he's been the one who's been in charge of that organization since then. But we kind of wanted to just look at this topic of how what happened and how we should be responding in situations like this if they were to happen in our churches as well. From my understanding, and Luke's going to read more of the official transcript here, it probably wouldn't hurt to go through the whole thing, but my understanding of the situation is that Pastor Matt has stepped down because of inappropriate messages on Instagram between him and another woman. Now, when we use that word inappropriate, we're going to have to define that because what comes to your mind when you first hear that is not what was actually happening in these messages from what we know. They haven't been released, but the statement that we've received from the elder board at the church and also from a law firm that they brought in to do an investigation of the situation also has weighed in on this issue. But Luke, you want to go ahead and read through some of that?
Yeah,
maybe hit the highlights.
I was glancing at the article. I think it might be a good way to do this. If we just go paragraph by paragraph and
okay,
we can make comments as we go. Mm-hmm. So this is on their own website, and there is a video you can watch of the actual part of their morning service where they addressed this.
And he actually got up and talked
yes,
as well and gave his apology and all.
Very hard thing to do.
Yes, it would be.
But here, let's just go through this so we can save our comments as we go through this. Here we go. A few months ago, an individual approached the Village Church lead pastor, Matt
That's
Chandler.
That's Matt Chandler.
That's
yep.
himself, Matt mm-hmm. Chandler. Somebody approached him with concerns about the way he was using direct messaging on social media with a woman who was not his wife. Matt shared those concerns with his wife, Lauren, and two elders, Josh Patterson and Elder Chairman Jason Swords, that same evening. So right away, he said somebody brought this concern. He told his wife, and he told two of the elders, and submitted to their leadership in addressing the situation. So that's the first paragraph. I feel like, you know, I was thinking about this. If you look at the model in the Bible, is that what you got over there? You know, what do you do when somebody in your, you know, we talk about church discipline. What are you supposed to do? Just go straight to Facebook and tell me, somebody's sinning in my church.
Yeah, right. No. So Matthew chapter 18, we talked about this actually in our small group this past week, I believe it was. So, but dealing with the whole process of discipline, you go to that person privately, one-on-one, which just sounds like this lady did, you know. And Matt Chandler actually took the next step,
mm-hmm.
and he went to two of the other elders within the church and said, hey, this is potentially an issue. And basically, my understanding is he told them, I didn't realize this was an issue, but it's kind of got me confused, you know, because this lady is saying this about the situation.
And to when it comes to the Bible pattern, what comes after that is mm-hmm. if he will not repent,
right.
do
then
this,
you go to the next
and then
step.
Do this. Yeah. We never got to those steps because mm-hmm. first step, it was like, okay.
Because he took the initiative.
Let's get this right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened. And so the elders have the information. The elders commissioned an independent law firm to conduct a review of Matt's messaging history across social media platforms, cell phone, and email. So they didn't do it themselves. They actually hired a law firm to do this. And the investigators report, and Matt himself submitted to that, and this other woman was not forced to, but she agreed to also let her cell phone be looked at by this. However they did this investigation, I don't know how they did, but that's, they both agreed to let it be done. And the investigator's report led the elders to conclude that Matt violated our internal social media use policies. Which, do we have one of those, Jason? Social media use policy?
Yeah, no, we don't. We don't, but that probably wouldn't be a bad idea to draft something like that.
But apparently, you know, for that big of a church, they had some kind of a policy. Yep. And they said he did break that. They didn't explain what that was. But more importantly, while the overarching patterns of his life has been above reproach, he failed to meet the 1 Timothy standard for elders of being above reproach in this instance.
Yeah, and so if you don't know what they're referring to in the 1 Timothy pattern, let's just look at 1 Timothy chapter number 3, and I'll go ahead and read verses 1 through... we'll just keep reading. Okay, starting in verse number 1. This is a true saying, if a man desire the office of a bishop, that's pastor here, he desireth a good work. A bishop then must be blameless. Okay, that's the first time it's mentioned. The husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, no striker, not greedy of filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, not covetous, one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being lifted up with pride, he fall into the condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must have a good report, this is the second time it's mentioned, have a good report of them which are without, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. And then it goes and it gives in verse 8 the qualifications of a deacon and on down through the rest of the passage. But here the idea is repeated twice, basically, that he is to be blameless and that he is to be well spoken of by the world outside as well. So basically, good reputation.
So does that mean if anybody makes any accusation against a pastor, he's not above reproach anymore and we need
to do
something about it?
And that's actually kind of a question that you have to deal with, because in this idea, the way they approached it, they said his overarching pattern of his life has been to be above reproach. So why is it that one situation means that he is no longer above reproach, which... I think the difference here is that it was verifiable. There was something wrong in the situation.
So we don't know what the conversation was, but I think let's read the rest of it and see if it says. Let's read the next paragraph and see, because I remember a few things that stood out to me.
Yeah, they specifically made a certain statement. Yeah, that we haven't covered yet.
So the elders continue. We are strong proponents of brothers and sisters in Christ being friends. But there are boundaries around what's appropriate in these kinds of friendships. A pastoral role requires a greater awareness of those boundaries. In this case, while the messages were not romantic or sexual in nature, the frequency and familiarity of the messages crossed a line. They revealed that Matt did not use language appropriate for a pastor, and he did not model a behavior that we expect from him.
Right, and that's a very key paragraph right there, because first of all, it tells us right off the bat, it was not sexual or romantic in nature. You know, so we're not talking about sexual sin, which this is important to make, because like I'm looking at YouTube videos dealing with this, and people are trying to get clickbait or something because they're talking about sexual sin causes Matt Chandler to have to step down from the pulpit. You know, and that's just trying to get people to click on your podcast.
It's
unrighteous judgment.
Yeah, you know? It's ignorance of the facts or jumping to a conclusion, or it's like, hey, I know how to get a lot of views.
Right.
Put this in here and I'll get a bunch of views.
Right. And the thing is, we don't have evidence to disprove that they weren't sexual in nature, because they haven't released the transcripts of any of those text messages.
Right.
But you also have to take into account, how do we approach our relationship with other people in general? Do we automatically just jump to the worst case scenario in every situation, where we assume everything is horrible, that's evil, especially when this isn't just the pastor, this is the elders and a law firm all concluding this, that it was not sexual or romantic in nature.
Right. The thing I thought about this was that they're talking about brothers and sisters, you know, or levels of appropriateness. You know, there are things that you can only say to your spouse. You know, there's things you and your spouse will talk about, and it's appropriate because you're married to your spouse. And those are things I would not say to my brothers and sisters that are my real flesh and blood brothers and sisters. There's a lot of things I would say to to my brothers and sisters. I wouldn't say to anybody else. It's kind of a second level down. Your wife, and then maybe your, you know, I might say things to my sister I would never say to another human being or another woman particularly. But even then, there's, you know, that's still going to be guarded.
Right.
So in this case, you know, a sister in Christ, I'm not going to treat her like even my real sister.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure out from these. So what were they saying to each
other? I know.
Did they just get very familiar, and were they making jokes maybe more like what you would make with your real sister? That
or like a best friend, you know? And I think there's this idea within Christianity that men and women can be best friends, but I think that that's oftentimes mm-hmm. misguided. When you get to that point, because emotional attachment is eventually going mm-hmm. to develop. That's my experience. That's what I've observed, you know. But and so there is a danger with they use the words frequency and familiarity of the messages. Now, what really makes me feel like this couldn't have been something that was over the top, really, really bad, is the fact that both the elders and Matt said that his wife Lauren and the husband of this other lady were all knowledgeable of the messages, you know, mm-hmm. so, which is interesting. You know, it couldn't have been something that just jumps off the page and says, oh, maybe you shouldn't be doing this, you right. know, but.
Whatever it was because the woman who first, it was a woman who was a friend
mm-hmm.
of the woman messaging. She was concerned.
Yeah.
So, you know, I
could come up with guesses as to why that might be, but.
My thought was just, I could imagine lots of churches all over America. There's probably lots of people concerned about things, you know. you see something and you're like, well, I don't know if that was appropriate or not. And we just probably don't do anything about it. Nobody ever says anything, or we have our own ideas in our heads of whether or not that was appropriate or not. And I think most churches would not do anything like
yeah.
this church did. They'd just yep. push it off, or, like, you know, this isn't that big a deal. But, you know, I was at least glad that they took it seriously enough to look at it.
Yes.
Because I think that is a problem we can have of just never doing church discipline because it's mm-hmm. too awkward, too embarrassing, don't want to do the work,
yeah,
whatever.
And the whole point is restoration. I think most people are jumping on the ball of kick him out, you know, just because mm-hmm. there's any rumor of any potential thing, it's automatically kick him out and he should never be allowed back into the pastorate, you know. And just reading some of these comments underneath the Roys report, if you don't know anything about that, Julie Roys is somebody who likes to call out even good preachers. She just likes to stir up the trouble, basically. And she's got her own problems, you know, that she's trying to ignore, and, in my opinion, kind of covering up. But just reading some of these comments underneath her article, while her information she posted was relatively factual and everything, the way that people are responding to it and the way she is encouraging those people who are responding to it in the comment section is not right, you know. People mm-hmm. like asking, how is the woman that was involved, as if she was raped or something like that, you know, or
yeah, is she okay?
You know, is she okay? Like, she must be devastated that he would do this to her, you know? And I'm like,
if anything, is there going to be a little bit of fallout?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just, you know, let's imagine it's the most innocent thing possible, but still perhaps inappropriate or ill-conceived,
mm-hmm. unwise,
or he knew what he meant and she knew what he meant, but from the outside it doesn't look right. Let's make it as innocent as possible.
Yeah,
even in that scenario, you know, I lost my train of thought. But we were talking about something before, and I was going to tie it in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh well, I just say, you know, even want to keep it innocent. I think people just like to jump on the bandwagon, like on here, this mm-hmm. person's comment. They're like, oh. Something terrible happened.
Right. And basically acting like the woman was victimized or something like that.
Right.
You know,
I would feel bad for her. That's what it was. Now I remember.
Yeah.
I would feel bad for her because she's, you know, probably embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
And people at church probably could have kind of figured out who she is.
Well, nobody has posted anything saying who she is. I think
right.
There's been discretion on that side. But
which is good.
On the flip side, Matt and Lauren have had to be public, mm-hmm. you know, and they've had to bear with it a lot.
So,
you know?
I'm not saying that there's no impact on her whatsoever.
Especially if there was an issue where she was developing an emotional attachment.
Mm-hmm.
There would be some fallout from all of this.
Yeah.
But you're acting like it's not a two-way street going on here, you know?
Right.
So.
But yeah, people are acting like either they didn't read the story or mm-hmm. they saw that YouTube video, somebody, Matt Chandler
yes.
did whatever, and they're like, oh, yep. well, I hope she's okay, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they would be right in that case if that was the facts. But
yeah. Yeah, and then you got people also on here complaining about the fact that he got up and he gave his public apology and was involved in his own discipline, is how they word it. You know,
what?
And I think honestly, what he had to do to go through that discipline was more than it would have been if he'd have just been quietly shushed out the door. You know, we don't
right.
We complain when certain situations are quietly handled in the background, and we say, oh, they didn't really deal with it. You know, that's part of the SBC's problem, because most of those people in the SBC, they aren't part of the SBC anymore. You know, they were kicked out, but because it was quietly done, they complained that it wasn't done right. But in this case, he's standing up publicly, giving his apology, humiliating himself to do so.
Yeah,
you know?
If the statements, if we take the statements at face value,
mm-hmm.
He did not come up with any of the punishments. It was all done by the elder board.
Yes, yeah, he subjected himself to their authority. And honestly, the very fact that he took it directly to them himself, first of all, shows a level of, I want to do what's right, and I'm repentance, you know? So I think as it comes down, go and read the next paragraph there.
While the elders believe that this did not rise to the level of disqualification, we do hold elders to a higher standard of behavior. The elders concluded, and Matt agreed, that Matt's behavior was a sign of unhealth in his life, that the best course of action would be for him to take a leave of absence from teaching and preaching at the village church. Matt's leave of absence is both disciplinary and developmental, which allows him to focus on growing greater awareness in this area. The timeline for his return will be dictated by the expectations the elders have laid out for his development.
Okay, and that's really the end of the important parts of their response right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the discipline. Basically, they've determined he isn't disqualified, but he doesn't rise to the level of standard behavior for a pastor, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because overall his reputation was beyond reproach. But he has this instance that he needs to deal with, and it is a sign that there's an issue in his life that he needs to deal with, you know?
So. Yeah, I mean, my thoughts after watching the video was, this was probably the best handled situation I've ever heard of.
Right.
And if anything, it was, they wanted to be so much, wanted to make sure they were above board, they may have gone further than they had to.
Further than they had to, yeah.
So if anybody's saying this was mishandled, the only way you could say it was mishandled was they were too hard on him. Because I could imagine, I said this, kind of alluded to this earlier, I can imagine lots of churches they just slough this off. Oh, mm-hmm. This was nothing. We're not going to ask him to embarrass himself like this.
Yeah.
You know, we're not doing this. You know, that woman's just too sensitive. Mm-hmm. Brought the issue up.
Yeah.
You know, maybe turn it around on her, bring her in and say, you know.
Which would not be a right response either, you know.
Would not have been a right response. I'm just saying, I think that would be the really bad responses. And I think me personally, my inclination would be, you know, ignore it, maybe it'll go away, you know, that, which is, I think, a typical Baptist response.
Yeah, I would hope, seeing as I'm the pastor, I have to hope this, right? Yeah.
So
I would hope that I would handle it in the way that he did, you know, taking responsibility for it, taking it seriously, not just ignoring it and pretending like it didn't happen, you know, or not just quietly trying to fix the problem and not dealing with it either, because he could have done that. He could have just texted the lady the next day and said, I'm sorry, I don't think it's wise for us to continue talking like this. And then he continues pastoring. He could have done that, you know.
Yes.
And he didn't do that. You know, he took
the
responsible
steps
to make it right.
He definitely went above and beyond to make it right.
So just to make it clear, basically, we're not saying they shouldn't have done anything. But we're also saying that I think a lot of people are jumping way overboard in totally attacking him, like a witch hunt type of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how our culture is with the Me Too movement, is to when there is something that even smells like it could be potentially wrong, they jump all over it and crucify the people. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of barriers to publicly confessing any sin.
Yeah.
One's going to be obviously the embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
Two's going to be
pride.
You know, your pride. Mm-hmm. And then what's the result going to be in your church? Are you, loss of standing?
Mm-hmm.
And then the third thing is people misunderstanding.
Yeah.
It's going to get out in the world and they're going to miss it. And then maybe a fourth thing would be, is this going to harm the cause of Christ? So that might actually be kind of a bad excuse. You're like, oh, this could harm the, so we're not going to do anything about it.
But I don't think any of those reasons are justification not to deal with it.
No,
they're the hurdles you have to get over. Yeah, definitely. And
go ahead.
No, go ahead. I got another thought, but it's different topic. So,
that thing where they said this does not rise to the level of disqualification, that interests me because churches have a lot of different ideas about
what disqualifies
a pastor.
Yeah,
and you know, so I think a lot of people, you kind of, if you want to put it two directions, two baskets, you know, which side are you on? I think you're either on the side of any sin, you're forever disqualified, and then I guess there could be a third. The third extreme is you're never disqualified.
Yeah,
but I think a more balanced,
we've seen that too. So.
A more balanced approach is in the middle, which is, I've kind of changed my idea, and I'm still thinking about this.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me if you think I'm crazy, but I feel like the qualifications for a pastor are not like this list of rules that can never be broken, or else you're no longer pastor material. It's more like this is what every Christian should be.
Right.
And it's not saying find the super Christian amongst the people who can then, you know, lord it over everybody because he's so spiritual. It's more like make sure he's actually a good Christian. If you look at the list of qualifications, it's like, well, pastor, husband and one wife. But if you're not a pastor, you can have multiple wives, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be a violent person. But if you're not a pastor, it's okay to be a violent person.
Right.
Is that true?
Yeah.
No. What is the goal of discipline? Restoration. Can a pastor stray in small a way as this, not being above reproach, can he be restored? I would say yes.
Yeah.
So if you're going to apply it here,
right,
then why wouldn't you apply it for like divorce or anything else?
Yeah. Yeah, I understand what you're saying there. I think the difference being between the divorce issue is it's now like a permanent effect. That's that would be the differentiation I would make there, I think.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately we're not to take this flippantly. That's the whole point of Paul's warnings to Timothy in 1 Timothy 5, where it talks about, let the elders that rule well be accounted worthy of double honor, especially they who labor in the word and doctrine. So first of all, elders who rule well, they are to be counted double worthy. That's one of the benefits of being a good elder. But then later on in the same text, there's another benefit. Against an elder, receive not an accusation, but before two or three witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And so this elevates it basically to the point of, we need to take this seriously, and we need to follow the proper procedures of church discipline. And so I think it really comes down to, is this an issue worthy of discipline? If it right. were any other man in the church, would we discipline him over this? But then also, right. because it's the pastor, we need to verify what's going on before we go that direction. And so I think that makes it a little bit more of a serious issue, you know, not flippant over every little issue. So.
Right. Oh, he, you know, somebody comes and says, we were golfing and the pastor hurt my feelings. He was insensitive.
Yeah. Did I hurt your feelings when we went golfing, Luke?
No, I was worried I was going to hurt your feelings.
Because I stunk. So, yeah.
No. I mean, you know, you could say, okay, can a pastor perhaps make a tiny little mistake from time to time? Does he have to be perfect?
Right, I know.
No, he doesn't have to be perfect.
No man's ever going to be.
Is he going to be tired sometime? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then somebody... He might be a little curt with somebody, so because, you know, okay, we really need to start the service, and he kind of cuts it. Okay, you know, we just let's go start the service, and then that person's upset. Oh, you're not above reproach now.
Mm-hmm.
Step down. So in this case, they are choosing to say we want to restore him
down
the road. But there are a lot of churches would say no. Once you break any of those, you're gone forever.
Yeah, and there's also got to be the consideration that love covers the multitude of sins. So there are certain things that we're going to cover.
Mm-hmm.
And other things that we're going to deal with. And so you have to decide when it rises to the level of this needs to be dealt with. You know, if it's just like irritation or their immaturity or they showed up late for something, you know, or those are situations where love should cover the multitude of sins, you know. But then you've got to determine, okay, what is the things that we should take seriously as matters of church discipline, basically.
And what really helped them make the decision is they know the content of the message.
Yeah, which we don't.
We don't.
And we just have to take their word, and we should be taking their word for it. So, last thing I wanted to bring up, though, along this topic is the idea of standards, you know, because a lot of these situations wouldn't have happened if the right standards were put in place for the pastor. And sometimes, I know when I first started pastoring, there are some things I started doing that people didn't understand
mm-hmm.
because I wanted to be above board, you know. I'm the only one in this building with my secretary, you know, and so I wanted to make sure I had somebody else in the building with me, you mm-hmm. know. And we're going so far as to install security cameras, and that has two purposes. It also gives right. some accountability there. You know, but
also just trying to modernize a little
bit. Yeah, modernize a little bit. Yeah, so, but I mean, you want to hold yourself above board, and you want to keep everything as safe mm-hmm. as possible. And then also you have like the Billy Graham rule. A lot of people have been talking about that because some articles came out talking about his four rules that he and a group of guys agreed to. But the first mm-hmm. one is one that I've always tried to practice. Don't be in a room alone with a woman. You know, don't mm-hmm. go to a dinner date with a woman alone. Don't be in a car alone with a woman, you know, because even if you don't do anything, people are going to talk, you know. And right. pastors are people who have been held up for attacks. Right. They will receive unjustified attacks as well, more than most people will yeah. because of their position.
Yeah. And I think, you know, obviously, could there ever be an exception to some rules? Mm. Yeah. You know, okay. Little old lady is in a rainstorm.
Oh yeah,
I'm never so in like a car an 80-year-old
lady. Yep.
so,
yeah.
But you know, yep. obviously, you know the difference when you're in mm-hmm. the situation. You yes, know you this do. Is something I should probably avoid. And yep. that's, I think that's really the whole point of this thing is like he should have sensed
mm-hmm.
as you know he should have had enough maturity to realize you know this shouldn't be going on.
Right.
That's how the elders felt.
Yeah, I kind of feel like maybe the situation was he and his wife Matt and Lauren. We're really good friends with this lady and her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a mutual friendship cross gender boundaries, basically, you know?
Right.
And so I feel like maybe because they were that close, those boundaries were violated. But
yeah.
One last point on the whole idea of standards. I think a lot of times we hear standards in our churches and we react against them negatively mm-hmm. because sometimes they've been used in the wrong way as weapons and as legalistic tools of measuring people's yeah. spirituality. But that doesn't mean that standards are unnecessary in our lives. You want a perfect example of standards? Look at the life of Joseph, okay? Joseph was Potiphar's wife, laid her eyes on him and wanted to tempt him into sin. Mm-hmm. And what did Joseph do? Joseph had committed that he would not only, he didn't want to be in the building because he left, you know, he fled, right. but also he refused to sit down beside her in the bed. Now, was sitting down beside her in the bed having sex?
No, but, so, but you kind of know where things are
headed. But you know where things are going to go, you know? And so you could say the sitting down in the bed is not a sin, right?
Mm-hmm.
But where it's going to go, it would be. And so he created a standard or a fence that would keep yeah. him from being in a position where he could be tempted.
That's kind of like if I'm on a diet and I'm not supposed to eat pie,
yeah.
and I go stand in the pie shop and stare at the mm-hmm. pies, you know, it's like, right. is that, yep. it's just not a good idea, you know?
Right. And so I think in a lot of cases, churches have overreacted and thrown all standards out the window,
mm-hmm.
you know, and new evangelical churches tend to be more in that category than conservative fundamental churches.
Don't be judgmental.
Yeah, I know.
Judge not, lest ye be judged.
But it's true in our circles as well mm-hmm. that this is a prevailing attitude amongst the average person in general because we have seen the extremes in our circles
mm-hmm.
and we know where it can go. But the natural tendency is to swing to the other side of the pendulum when the yeah. truth is in the middle. Truth is, the issue that determines whether standards are legalistic or not is the heart behind them. Why am I doing what I am doing? If I'm doing what I'm doing to merit the favor of God, then it becomes legalism, mm-hmm. you know? But if I am doing what I'm doing because I honestly want to seek to please God, and I believe that the Lord wants me to do this in my life, then I don't see how that can be legalism, you know?
Nope. I liked their motto.
What was the motto?
The church motto is to love God, love others, and what was the third thing? Love God, love others, and serve Him? I forget what the third thing is, but I like the motto because it's, you know, it's the golden rule. It's what Jesus said.
yeah.
If you will do these two things, all the law of God is hinged on
mm-hmm.
it. So in this case, applying it to Matt Chandler, it's like if he was, maybe that's why the elders are saying there's a unhealthiness.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, what does that mean? An unhealthiness. but, you know, if you love God, if you were loving God as you should, then you would realize that this was going against God. And if yep. you loved this other woman like you should, you realize I don't want to be doing something to her that I shouldn't or
right.
causing problems for her down the road.
Yeah, and so in talking about this situation, I know we've defended Matt Chandler pretty much, basically. We believe they did the right thing here. I want to make it clear that that doesn't mean we support everything he believes and holds to. Matt Chandler is a continuationist, meaning he believes, he's very mild, but he believes in the continuation of tongues and different things in certain settings. He would not hold to Pentecostalism or charismatic theology in general. But also, he tends to be more favorable towards Black Lives Matter and things like that. Yeah. So, we're not weighing in on all these other issues. We're just weighing in on this one issue.
I mean, I was weighing in pretty blind because I didn't really know much about the church or anything. I was weighing it taking it solely at face value.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what does the Bible say? How do you deal with these things? And I feel like they dealt with it very biblically.
Yes, yeah. And I know of Matt Chandler because of some books that I've read dealing with like dating. I think I read a book by him on dating. And then they have a really, really good, strong model for education in their church. Now, granted, they're a mega church. They can do it a little bit better than we can, you know. But I really like what they're doing with the education ministry of their people in the church. So, but... anyways, hope this has been a help. As you see these YouTube videos, don't get sucked into the clickbait, you know?
Yeah. So. And you might see these words, scandal, you know, and it's almost worse to not give information because everybody, your imagination
will run wild and draw
the worst possible scenario, you know, as with anything, you know, in the news, you hear about, you know, somebody murdered somebody or what, these big stories, somebody beat somebody in the park, you know, don't just jump and assume, you know, you know, it's called the court of public opinion.
Like,
that doesn't mean you know what's true.
Right.
Just try to get some facts.
Right. And love thinketh no evil. Mm-hmm. And we are also commanded not to bear false witness.
Yeah.
Those should be very strong deterrents from just jumping on and making half-determined decisions about what we think's going on.
It's so easy because, you know, our pride.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy for us to sit in our chair and be like, oh, I'm a better person than
that. Yeah, right.
I would never. It's kind of like the, you know, the armchair quarterback or the Monday quarterback. You're watching the game. You're like, that idiot quarterback. It's like, you're sitting there eating potato chips.
You couldn't even run
5 yards.
Yeah.
But we are prideful, and that's really why we like to jump on and say, oh, another one down. I'm better than him.
And now there might be information that comes out later on and makes us regret our decision and talk right now, you know. But I just want to kind of leave it with this idea that the facts that we know, believing what we know to believe and thinking no evil, we have to conclude what we have concluded.
Yeah.
Unless something else comes out later on that changes those issues, you know. So
you know, I think takeaways for me are, just, you know, always try to be biblical. If you love God and want to do what's right and you want to try and be biblical, then that's going to steer you, not what's embarrassing, what hurts my pride, you know.
Yep.
That was kind of what I got. I was impressed by how they handled it.
Amen. Okay, well, we hope this has been a help, and it should be a model for, I think, how we should be handling situations like these as well.
I send him away with a funny since we've been so
dark? Yep, go
so
ahead.
So I was thinking about this. The guy who invented knock-knock jokes, I think he should win a Nobel Prize.
Y'all didn't hear that, but that
pause was Jason giving me, you know, the one of the five responses to dad jokes. I'll tell you about those some other time.
Yep. Okay. Grace and peace be with you, guys, and walk with the Lord.
Amen.